Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. Still coming on the program about a half hour from now, April Murray Fogle at the 11 o'clock hour. My friend Sam Roberts, kind of give us an update, and we'll walk through some of these races where he sees they are, and how much polling he's done and what he thinks. The polling's not an absolute. You never want to really look at it and say, okay, this poll says this, and this is the outcome. The way you look at polling, the polling in the state is not great. And we've had this discussion, but I do think the trends are important. I think if a candidate is moving, you see movement in their numbers, that's something that needs to be, I think, just highlighted. That this campaign is doing something right. They were in this poll with the same methodology, were here, and now they're here. Or if they're doing their backsliding and they're going the other direction, well, there's something going on there. And the number you always want to lean on the most, now that's not an absolute either because a lot has changed, is that May 19 number. And we could go back through it. Generally speaking, the candidate wins the plurality, wins the runoff. There are some very big exceptions here. Barry Moore did not win a plurality in his congressional race. Beat Jeff Coleman. We could go back to Robert Bentley and Bradley Byrne. Congressman Byrne then wasn't a congressman, but he had won a plurality, got beat by Robert Bentley in a runoff. And there's a lot of questions about that outcome. Another one that sticks out in my mind, when Spencer Baucus stepped aside at 14, Paul DeMarco wins a plurality, but gets beaten in a runoff by Gary Palmer, who's been congressman ever since. But otherwise, what you see on May 19th tends to be what happens in a primary, a May 19th type primary. It's kind of a reflection, generally speaking, of what we are to expect in that runoff. And if it's really close, who knows? But there's some exceptions. I'm sure there are a bunch of others that we can walk through. 251-343-0106. Get to your text in just a moment. Right now, kind of keep an eye on the news, I guess. The Pentagon is locked down due to a hazmat incident. That's being reported right now on CNN. Also, we were just listening to Congressman Moore on the program, the Pfizer renewal. The two things that Barry Moore had to be in D.C. for, not here on the campaign trail, one was a reconciliation measure that passed, but the other was this Pfizer renewal that the president wanted, and it was a short-term extension, but they did not get that. And part of that is, yes, there's some questions about warrantless surveillance and things of that sort, but also just the Democrats are never going to go along with really anything Trump is doing. They are skeptical of this Republican administration, and they're exercising their vote in such a way to reflect that. So there's that. Also in the news, 11th Circuit is kind of put its foot down. Nitrogen hypoxia. We're still fighting that fight. Terry Sewell, who we just talked about in the last hour, She's going on offense here. There's a lot of, how many of you are keeping up with the Act Blue saga? That Democrats have engineered a way to, and it's very effective, a way to raise money by kind of crowdsourcing for a candidate. And they do, they package these small donations that don't really need to be, they don't require the full disclosure of a big contribution to a federal candidate. And what they're finding is they're just kind of micro packaging a bunch of donors. And there's some questions about it. Is it on the up and up? Are these real people? And in the second part, she's going to bat for the Southern Poverty Law Center, who's still doing its Southern Poverty Law Center thing. Are you keeping up with the Southern Poverty Law Center drama? Essentially, the Trump DOJ has accused them of bankrolling their own adversary. What do I mean by that? And it goes back to Charlottesville. And they, I guess, under the guise of what they call paying informants, were paying people who were actually causing problems. The instigators of some of this unrest, if you will, that was immediately in the media, like tied back to Donald Trump somehow. Good people on both sides. Remember that, Charlottesville? But what we found out is, well, one of the main actors in that was getting paid by the Southern Poverty Law Center. So the accusation there is the Southern Poverty Law Center was taking money from its contributors, turning around and paying the people representing the quote-unquote hate that it was supposed to be fighting, and it was manufacturing its own problems to justify its existence and justify its need for more money and get the people to give more money to it. Now, I've heard a defense, well, you know, it's a Doug Jones went to bat for Southern Poverty Law Center. Well, it's like, I was a U.S. attorney. We paid informants all the time. But the difference is the Southern Poverty Law Center is not a legal investigatory entity. It's not a, now it's treated as such. It's held in this high standard that it shouldn't have because it's just solely baselessly partisan. But the Trump DOJ is accusing the Southern Poverty Law Center of fraud, taking money from donors under the guise of saying we're fighting this hate. And then bankrolling the hate, essentially, is the accusation. Terry Sewell, in a hearing yesterday, says it's only because the Trump administration has an animosity toward strong black women. I believe she called it harassing black women with bogus lawsuits. So there you have it. 251-343-0106. We're watching these elections. I'm kind of veteran sogging out, but we went ahead and, I mean, we asked the question we needed to ask, I felt like, to both of these candidates. We talked about it with Joey yesterday. I think in a month from now, we'll laugh at this and say none of this really mattered. But such as it is the news of the day. Let's start with some of your text here. Jason says, morning, Jeff. Moore seemed to have a solid explanation on the service record today, but seemed a little morose and not his usual chipper self. Well, it's been a long few days, and I kind of prefer the morose Barry Moore. Something I've noticed about Congressman Moore over the last few years, he's really sped up his cadence. And I don't know, and maybe it's just you get locked in. I do it sometimes here on the air. And you just start just going and going and going. And it becomes difficult to keep up. But otherwise, I thought it was kind of a a good side of his story, and that's all we want. We want Jared's side of the story yesterday. I think we got it. And we have Barry's side of the story. It's up for you to decide. It's not for me to tell you what I think necessarily or how to vote. Sean writes, Jeff, you forgot to ask him about the fantasy bridge. What are you specifically referring to, Sean? Mike, the issue with Moore isn't whether or not he's a veteran. The question is whether he embellished or misled people about his service and his accomplishment. I feel that he has. Others may not care. If he did, then he's undeserving of any Alabamian's vote. Well, I will acknowledge he played fast and loose with it. I think when he was kind of questioned about it, they were not prepared. But was it Dale Jackson was on this show earlier this week, and you heard from him. And he sits down at 180. If you follow him on social media. But he insists that because of the National Guard service prior to going to Auburn and enrolling in an ROTC program, that settles it for him. Now, why is Dale Jackson the authority? Well, he is an Army veteran. I heard Troy Carrico yesterday when I was on with Joey Clark also made kind of offered a good explanation. Maybe somebody else we need to talk to. It's Kent Davis or Pete Ream, if you're out there listening. Was it sloppy? Is it sloppy or is it, as a lot of people are claiming, stolen valor? I don't think it's stolen valor. And here's why. He will say he's a veteran. He will use that in his campaign promotional material. But it's not like the thing that he is really running on. It's not vote for me because I'm a veteran. It's like vote for me also because I'm a veteran. It's not his claim to fame, I suppose. Because Barry Moore's claim to fame, if you asked him right now, would probably be this. And a lot of you would say, oh, that's dumb. But that he was the very first person to endorse Donald Trump. That's on record. I was there. A lot of you were there. Live People Stadium, August 2015. All my friends in the national media wanting to know about Mobile, Alabama. I'm explaining them the ins and outs. My wife and I, she's still a Breitbart reporter at the time. We're there. And out of the crowd, Barry Moore gets up on stage, says he's endorsing Donald Trump. No one had really done that. As Jeff Sessions got on the stage that day but did not endorse. Jeff Sessions' endorsement came much, much later in Madison, right before the primary. So this was long before all that. And why this sticks out in my mind is because I remember being in that crowd of people and trying to track down, and I eventually did, track down Barry Moore. I think I still got the audio where I interviewed him there in the crowd asking why he did that. Why did you find it important to get on the stage and endorse Donald Trump? That's what I think he would tell you. It's a big part of why you ought to vote for him. You may disagree with it, but I think that's to him much more important than the military service. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
They say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just like no bandit run.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FN Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. We'll keep rolling through a few of these texts here. By the way, April Murray Fogle coming up in the next segment. This was a lengthy text, a fact I had forgotten about Wes Allen until I heard him speak yesterday at a Republican women's club, is that he was a sponsor of the VCAP bill to the House of Representatives. I read about it later and learned that the bill was fiercely opposed by Democrats in the Alabama House, but Wes persevered and the bill passed. So he's factually historically conservative voting record, which voters can look at to decide their choice for lieutenant governor. He was VCAP, and they took some heat. When we got VCAP in Alabama, Governor Ivey signed it. The Biden administration came after us. I mean, he absolutely deserves credit for VCAP. It was this, guys. That was the last, I think it passed on the last day of the quadrennium. And we had to that point, if I recall, didn't really have much. It was Mac McCutcheon's last term as speaker. It was right before Ledbetter came in. Ledbetter was majority leader then. And really, like, the most conservative thing that quadrennium up until that day had been the abortion ban in 2019, which was obviously proved to be very important once the Dobbs decision came along. But the VCAP bill and the bathroom bill, there on the last day, it was Wes Allen's and Scott Stothagen got that through on the last day and deserve credit for it. But certainly you're right about that. But if I were him, I would certainly lean more on his legislative record than his. I mean, Secretary of State, he got us out of the ERIC database, or created the ERIC database, got us out of this database that had been kind of created. It has some kind of a Pew Charitable Trust connection. And he and Merrill had a real ugly public back and forth about these databases. And what I mean by that is that you register to vote in one state, and what happens is your old registration, the states can kind of talk to one another and say, hey, you're now registered to vote in Alabama. You're no longer registered to vote in Tennessee or wherever. But they check that. They try to keep the voter rolls current. And there's some trepidation about using a system, a database that maybe had some kind of left of center entities plugging money into it. Why would the Pew Center, I guess that has a Soros connection to it, but why would you use a database with these third parties putting into it was the question. But other than that, I mean, I think his legislative record, but very, very strong. A named texter, Moore's ads say he's helped thousands of Alabama families. They provide examples of how all of those families he has helped, other than voting for the normal bills in Congress. Well, I think if you ask, and my guess, they would probably tell you it's a lot of what they stopped. So Barry Moore is the only member of Alabama, a congressional delegation, that's in the Freedom Caucus. And by virtue of being in the Freedom Caucus, Barry Moore's gotten a seat on the House Judiciary Committee. That's the kind of leverage they have. Now, there's some friction there, especially with Mike Rogers. Robert Atterholt is the senior member, but Mike Rogers, a very senior member, thinks you don't want to join these third party extracurricular caucuses. You want to show a unified front. But Barry Moore went against that and joined it, and I think he's leveraged that to do some things to stop some bills from getting through. But that's a discussion for later. Let's get a break in here. Be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Horst Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Plenty of your text. We'll get to those later in the show. Still to come, Sam Roberts, my friend from Coleman Daily. Like I said, he's just running a tracking poll. And we'll talk about where he thinks the state of some of these races are, kind of a baseline for what to expect. But he's been accurate these last couple of elections, so that's why I am intrigued by what he's got to say. But joining us now, my colleague at 1819 News, and I don't know if she likes me saying this or not, but you never can have enough April Marie on FM Talk 106.5. April Marie Fogel joins us here. April Marie, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm ready for this election to come and go.
Yeah, me too, but I guess I'm kind of at a moment of zen with it, and it's going to play out how it's going to play out, and we're just on the sidelines being spectators, so that's what I do. I offer you color commentary, and you can choose to believe it or not, and whatever you want to think of it, but I guess we'll start with Veteran Gate, and I feels like it's losing steam to me. Like, I you know, those of us who would care, I think the vast majority of people are kind of eh, but we're starting to hit the law of diminishing returns, it feels like.
It really does. Now, it was this time last week you and I were talking, and I was like, is anybody besides us going to be talking about this? And is this going to be a thing? And I think the fact that now we're talking about, okay, it's kind of
played out.
Done.
Yeah.
It's you're like 7 days. That's not, I don't think that was what the Jared campaign would have expected. That I don't think that they would be expected that 7 days, and I'm too tired to even look, push the button to read the latest ads
he himself never really embraced it the way you need to, I think, to make it work.
I agree. I think that he was trying to hedge his bets. Let them figure it out. Let them, you know, let everybody else figure it out. I don't know. I think he said, I don't know, on your show. If you're going to allege something that serious, you better know.
Yeah. And I mean, you had time to go through each side here and make an assessment. You are a Navy SEAL. You know military and you understand it. And it still to this day is, I don't know, maybe not. So I don't know that really sells.
Well, and I worry, you know, like has this turned people's attention away from what could have been happening in the Jared campaign, where people are getting to know him. People know Barry. He's a known quantity, and his supporters are really out there working hard for him. You know, did this take away some of that for Jared?
Well, this is sort
rather
of
than
my,
talking about him.
My kind of analysis of it. Jared Hudson is very good at selling Jared Hudson. Jared Hudson's done a very good job at selling himself as a candidate. He just started at nothing, and he is now in a runoff. He defeated a statewide elected official, one of the highest ranking statewide elected officials, is Steve Marshall, and that was his game plan. The attack stuff, it just doesn't really work for him. It's just not his thing, and I think that kind of maybe got them a little distracted here.
Well, and I think you have to have some level of trust in order to, you know, going into an attack like this. And, you know, he didn't because there are still people who don't know him. So his star is rising as this is happening. And, you know, I just don't think the timing worked well for him. And so, yeah, I think we'd be at a totally different place if it was Steve Marshall making these accusations against Barry, because people know and trust Marshall.
Right.
But that's not where we are.
Well, also, it's just the presentation. And I mean, I get it. You got to craft these commercials to cater to a certain voter, right? But like when we're going to have the discussion, when you and I are talking about it on radio or wherever, and we're trying to elevate it and get beyond kind of the silliness, you know, with all the like comic book looking graphics or whatever, it becomes difficult because what you're, first off, it's a very difficult topic to understand. But secondly, like, you know, serious people try to talk about it and you go through all the documents and there's like compelling cases and, you know, we're really what is being alleged here exactly? And that's not real clear to me. I think we can make our own ideas of allegations, but that's not where these guys are.
Well, I think there is an audience, but it's much smaller than they thought of the, you know, 2.5 years versus 6 years versus whatever years. And, it never occurred to me, you know, he's got service. We see him picture serving. We know he wasn't dishonorably discharged. To me, in my brain, that automatically goes to veteran status. And then when we have to have a 5-10 minute explainer, that's when you've lost me. And I think that's when you've lost most voters.
Yeah, that, you don't get a DD-214 for this type of service, which I knew what a DD-214 was, and we've heard this all before, but when we start getting into it and there's a perfectly reasonable explanation and then you're still doubling down on DD-214s, why aren't you taking it to that next step? Well, why aren't you saying that this documentation doesn't suffice for a DD-214? Why are you still stuck on that? And it's just like things like that. That's where I think the whole thing starts to fall apart.
Yeah, there was... It initially grabbed my attention with the, did you fulfill your commitment? And, you know, the 6 years you keep quoting, was that supposed to, did you do 2.5 years of that? Is that what's happening? But then when they were like, that's not what matters. What matters is all this other things in these forms. I'm like, all right, I'm out. You know,
explaining
like,
you're losing, right?
I'm tapping out. If it was a yes or no question, is this what you're saying? No, it's not. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, it's like the crazy conspiracy theory person that shows up with a big binder full of like whatever, and you're like, no one has time for it. But more importantly than what you and I think and all of that, I think it's this: that is this going to matter on election day? And I'm starting to think it's not.
Yeah, and that I always say that. Like, what is the motivating factor for someone getting out to vote? And is it going to be this cycle for this particular, you know, slate of candidates? Is Trump's endorsement going to move people? It'll move some people. I don't think it'll move have the impact it's had in other states. You know, is the veteran thing going to move people? Again, I think it moves Jared people. I don't know that it moves, you know, people who were undecided. What is the thing that people are going to pop up out of bed and be like, I got to go vote in this election, in this runoff? And I don't know what that is yet.
Yeah, I think it's low turnout. Now, look, where it could matter, I mean, small voter turnout, small number of votes, every vote counts. And this is what I tell my audience all the time. It's less about the percentages and more about the raw vote totals, because if you're down 5 points in a poll, that seems like an insurmountable lead. But in a low turnout event, it's really not. All you got to do is right. Go knock on a few more doors, push out a few more robocalls or text, push out, you know, whatever. Just it becomes a numbers game and less about the percentages. But I don't know. Here's the other thing we're going to have to do. We're going to do this at 18-19. The polling has got to be held accountable. We can't have public polling released to the media that is just wholly inaccurate. We got to get a handle on this. We can't have one campaign putting out their quote-unquote internals that show a candidate up by 10 and then he goes in to lose by 10. And that's just not, you know, we got to set some guardrails up here and stop misleading the public. Because where I'm at on it right now is, well, if I run this campaign's poll, then I need to run this guy's poll, as long as it's, you know, done and presented in a scientific, you know, plausible way. But I think we're starting to get off the rails here.
No, I'd agree. And there's so many of them because, you know, of the four races, the races that are there, everybody's kind of got a stake in it. And so where do they end up looking back in hindsight in terms of closest to the actual mark? And don't tell me they've moved so significantly in the last week that you know, that you did have this up 10 or down 10 or whatever it is. and away from the mark. So I like that idea, and I think that that helps the voters. I think that part of the reason Jared Hudson got into the runoff is because at the very end, people were afraid they were missing out. There's a fear of missing out of, oh, that he's surging. Oh, he's surging. Well, I'm going to vote for him. Oh, the polls have him up. I'm going to vote for him. I want to vote for the guy who wins. And I think that hurt Marshall and helped Jared a lot, because I was hearing way too many different places in my world that that, you know, there's a Jared surge, and the conversations around that made it happen.
Well, there was a Jared surge, and they got, but that's how they got there, right? That they invented it.
Yeah, exactly.
It became
self-fulfilling
prophecy.
That's exactly right. I'm convinced they created the surge and people fell for it. They were like, okay, well, I want to be with the guy who's going to win. I want to be with the guy who's surging. And so that by saying he's surging, they brought those numbers up. Genius.
Yeah, right. But for the sake of like our discussion here, that's not how polling is. It's not supposed to be used as propaganda.
If you want
us to take it seriously. Now, you can put out your polls and you could, but I think from this point forward after this election, there's going to be a standard here of accountability. And if you're off by like more than 5 points or 10 points, you know, I don't know. I guess 5 points is within the margin of error. But if you're just so wrong, I can't take your poll seriously. We can't be posting that on our website and acting like, wow, look at this massive movement in this race. And to me, that's, you know, the other problem with the polling, April Marie, is I just don't think pollsters are very good at it in Alabama. And let me explain. It's not for lack of like trying, but they look at like, okay, these are the people who came out in 2022. We think that that would be a reflection, you know, a midterm election. It's off cycle. It's the statewide offices on the ballot. We think that we could use that as the template for 2026, but you can't, because the state is so dynamic. It's tribal. There may be a runoff in this part of the state. There may not be in this part of the state. This candidate may be from this part of the state. For example, 2022 was a Katie Britt cycle. A lot of Wiregrass voters got out to vote for Katie Britt. Maybe that's true with Barry Boer. But things of that nature, they're not applicable from election to election to election.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And you know, we just looking at what was going on with those congressional races and down in your neck of the woods, and there was, you know, there was supposed to be this crazy surge. And I don't know that the crazy surge happened the way they expected. Did you, looking at those results, do you feel like?
No, it's because they moved them. I think you might have gotten something out of it had they not called them off the way that they did.
Made them ghost races.
Yeah, they made them ghost races. Then I got to later. And that's true. They did have to later, but maybe you did not have the person that is a Rhett Marcus or Jerry Carl voter go show up because they want to vote for their neighbor. They want to vote for the guy that helped them out 20 years ago or whatever, things of that sort.
Yeah, so I feel like there's a lot of dynamic things within the state, and I don't know that all of the polls are representing that. And, you know, I feel like we used to have just one or two pollsters, and now there are four or five out there. That's at least what it seems like in the field.
Well, now everybody's doing their own polls. Because what's happened is the technology has changed. You can do text and online polls and do it in a scientific way. It's not like putting a poll up on your Twitter feed or something, that there is a way to target people who are online that you think are likely Republican voters or whatever.
Right. So it's very, that part of it is intriguing in terms of more information out there, but using that information to mislead the voters is a no-go.
Yeah. We gotta do something there. It's up to us in the media to determine this, but it's a brave new world. And like I said, really, it was just trying to like get a grasp of it and like, okay, we're running this person's poll. We'll run this person's poll. Let people decide for themselves. But at some point, I mean, why we're on a poll that's just insanely inaccurate.
Right. Nope. You're on it. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is our last discussion before we head into the election next Tuesday. Any predictions here?
Oh, goodness. I think Barry pulls it out. as I cough my head off. Barry pulls it out. I think John Wall. I know that some people think it's going to be Wes Allen. I think it'll be John Wall. Catherine Robertson. And I think the Corey Hill.
Corey Hill, yeah.
And Jim Ziegler.
Ziegler going to win that. Well, I mean, I can't quibble with any of that. I'm still got a big question mark on the Senate, because I think Birmingham could very well outpace the rest of the state. And if that happens, Jared could win.
Well, but, I'm worried about all the money.
Well, I think the money's going to come in for Barry. I think Jared's out of money. I think he's leaning on the PACs. But I'm going to tell you, like, and Barry mentioned it. He was just on the program right before you, that tonight, I guess, Donald Trump is going to do a teletown hall with Barry Moore live. Not a robocall, but an actual live thing. That's always good for a few points. I mean, you know, especially in this low turnout event, just reminding voters that, hey, Barry Moore is my guy. I know people don't like it. I'm not going to be told who to vote for, but a lot of people do. You know, they really, a Trump we trust.
Well, in the last one, they dialed up the phones, and then we're like, hold for a town hall with the president. And yeah, I think that can be effective. You know, I know a lot of people don't have time or the patience to dial in and wait and all that stuff. But the way they did it last time, you know, had a level of effectiveness on it.
Yeah, and I think that's why you saw the big Barry bump and the big John Wall bump. John Wall, like, you know, everybody's kind of sour on him, but you remember the polling going into that had him down to Wes Allen, and he ekes it out. He hits 40%. He outpulled the vote by like 15.
I agree. And that was probably of all the results. That was probably, I was like going between Jared, you know, beating Marshall, and then Wall coming in first. Those are tough, like, didn't see that coming moments.
Yeah. Well, hey, we got to get out of here a little long, but if also find you online, where can they look?
Best place is 1819 News, and then on X, APRYLMARIE.
April Marie Fogle, y'all check her out. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Sam Roberts from Cohen Daily. Be with us in the next hour. In the meantime, text line 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program? Just hit us up on that text line. Tim writes, Jeff, I see where some states are mentioning doing away with their gas taxes. I don't guess that's an option for us, since Meemaw has already earmarked our gas tax for the next century. She has for at least the next 20 years. And the other problem with the gas tax, Tim, is it's a self perpetuating gas tax, meaning what? That it will increase per gallon based on a, I guess it's an inflationary metric. The price of the cost of construction materials, there is a index out there, and that index is what the Alabama fuel tax is pegged to. That the dirty little secret is here, if they wanted to raise your gas tax, they wouldn't have to do it through the Alabama legislature. They could do it by just hanging out, like just inflation. Now, on that point here, it's also this. Well, could that index ever go down? And generally speaking, they don't. They don't go down. That would be some kind of deflation. So that's kind of where we are on that. I don't know how you could eliminate your gas tax unless you were, you know, had toll roads, And we have shunned those. There's like two toll bridges left in Alabama, the one just outside of Montgomery and the one outside of Tuscaloosa. Or if you just rely solely on federal funding, and there's always a match component to that. Paula would have voted for Jay if not for the Al Akbar ad. Yeah, I just, but we asked him about it. Like, why did you think that was important? And he's, the compelling case he made to me, and you take it for what it's worth, is that in Texas, they're trying to figure out ways around prohibitions on Sharia law.
Birmingham.
But Texas, a red state. Could that happen in Alabama? I suppose, maybe. I don't know. 251-343-0106. More your text on the way. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Mr. T.